Is the sea. Jared, what do you think about when you think of gold?
Gold? It's a fucking... I don't know, it's kind of like chintzy almost.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean...
Gaudy? You think of Donald Trump when you think of gold?
I just think silver looks cooler.
Oh, you're just more of a silver guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'd be more of a silver bug than a fucking gold. What do they call them?
Digger?
No.
She steal my money.
Well, I'm in need. Man, she's a trifling.
So you think it's chintzy, kind of low class?
Well.
Or it's high class, makes it low class.
Okay, so I think if you're wearing it, you probably haven't been high class very long.
Mm.
But you probably got it. If you've had it, or wait, if you've had it for a long, if you're like very wealthy,
yeah,
then you got a lot of it, but you don't let people know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
As in, it's something that the more you have, the less you want people to know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so.
The more you see someone's gold, then unless, that means they don't have very much.
Unless you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And then you make a toilet out of it.
Right.
That's got to be so cold.
Yeah.
You fucking metal toilet? I don't know.
Well, that's our topic for this, I'm going to say, new series.
You know where they have, you know where I've encountered metal toilets the most?
Where?
Jail.
Well, that's our topic, is metal toilets for this new series. No, it's gold, Jared.
Gold?
Gold.
Solid gold.
Have you heard of this thing called the periodic table of elements? Well, gold is one of them.
I think, I don't know, maybe like, you know, when we were kids, we went to that place and they told us stuff about like...
Are you ready for the quiz?
Oh, God.
What's the chemical symbol for gold?
Oh, AU. I thought you were going to ask me, like, what fucking number it was or some shit.
All right, go for it. What's the atomic number of gold?
89?
Oh, close. 79.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very close, though. Now, the symbol AU comes from the Latin word for gold, aurum.
Yes.
Aurum. And as you said, atomic number 79.
And silver and... French is argent or something like that.
Yeah, and that's why it's AG,
similar.
Right? Yeah. So, I thought maybe this would be a good opportunity to, like, in the tradition of this show, review...
I just said fucking argent, like, Spanish. It'd be like argent.
Both Romance languages.
Yeah, but different. Yeah.
Well, in the tradition of this show, I thought maybe since we're moving into a new field here, elements, maybe it'd be good to review atomic theory.
All right.
So... Go ahead.
So I loved, like, the theory of chemistry.
Uh-huh.
And the theory of physics.
I know you love the practice of it, too.
From
your heroic drug consumption.
I fucking hate math.
Oh, okay.
So much.
You love the esoteric practice of chemistry.
I like field work. And I like thinking about shit and knowing how it works. I don't want to prove it.
Well, you've already said gold's... atomic number, which is 79, mm-hmm. which means it has 79 protons mm-hmm. in the nucleus of a gold atom.
I mean, for the sake of, like, brevity, yes.
Yeah, its atomic weight is 196.96.
Does it have, like, isotopes and shit,
or is it just... It does, yeah, okay. It does have isotopes. Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'll go ahead and jump into the history of gold.
So gold, like a fucking gold bar, that's AU.
AU, yeah.
The whole thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, but of course...
Because it does not tarnish. It does not oxidize.
We're going to get to the properties. Don't worry.
Okay.
But you're talking about isotopes of gold.
Yes.
So, you know, this science of alchemy was a big deal for a long time.
Science?
Okay, for hundreds of years, people were trying to synthesize gold out of lesser elements.
Right.
Out of, like, lead and others.
Science. Okay?
Well, the thing is, you know, in the last 100 years, we actually have done successful alchemy with a little thing known as a nuclear reactor.
Totally.
Because what a nuclear reactor is doing is synthesizing new elements out of lesser ones, right?
Yeah, it's basically forcing chemical reactions that shouldn't be able to happen otherwise.
Yeah. So although gold typically appears in nature as a stable isotope with an atomic weight of 197.
Isn't it basically like with the use of lasers we can cheat?
Yeah, well, yeah, with the use of nuclear reactors you can cheat.
You can circumvent the laws of chemistry.
Yeah, however, any gold that is created in a nuclear reactor has one not-so-great side effect.
It's radioactive.
Yeah, that any fan of the James Bond movie Goldfinger would remember. Like, that was his whole plot, was, I'll make the gold radioactive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then James Bond does a rape as well in that movie.
Well, I mean, it was the 60s. She was...
She didn't know
she wanted it, or...
Nope.
You're quite a girl, Pussy.
I'm strictly the outdoor type.
I'd like to think you're not in all of this caper.
Skip it. I'm not interested. Let's go.
Listeners, I'm just going to say, don't go back and rewatch Goldfinger. It does not hold up.
I'm not saying I think that you can fuck the lesbian out of somebody. I'm saying that's what happens in the movie.
Uh-huh.
It
was called, like, a corrective rape.
I didn't write the text. I'm just reporting what was on it.
Yeah, yeah. So, by the same brilliant minds who brought us Goldfinger, you know, this theory of the radioactive gold particle being worthless, which, you know, basically, sure, yeah, you don't want a radioactive gold particle.
Or, I mean, maybe, what can you do with it?
Not much, because it'll give you cancer.
Well, but you put it in a lead tube, and then, I don't know.
So, yeah, not much.
I don't know. Maybe that would have been the key to, like, fucking Tesla's wireless.
All right. Let's review atomic theory before we get into any more, you know, corrective actions, okay? So, what is an element, Jared?
What is an element? It's a thing that's made up of smaller things?
No. It's an indivisible substance. It's thing.
But, like, it's made up of atoms.
No, an element is an atom.
Wait. Oh.
The properties of an element come from the smaller things, the protons, the neutrons, the electrons.
Yeah.
But the element itself is an indivisible substance.
Yeah, that's the smallest version of it. Atoms.
Yes. It's the smallest unit of mass, essentially.
A single cell organism.
No, that's biology, and we're talking physics right now.
Right, but okay? It's the same thing. It's the same unit of division.
It's an indivisible unit.
It's one, and it's the smallest one.
Yeah, you cannot break... I mean, again, leaving nuclear reactors out of the discussion.
Yeah.
You cannot break an atom of a single element into other elements.
Unless you cheat.
Unless you cheat with a nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are 118 elements... 94 of which occur naturally on Earth. And it's the number of protons.
Like 120 some.
Yeah, there might be a few more. You know, but some of these are only created under laboratory conditions.
Yeah, and like
they
once,
decay within, you know, milliseconds.
And like once, right? For some of them, just so they basically could prove they could.
Yeah, you know, just man playing God, that kind of bullshit, right?
But it's not like useful for anything, really.
No. But actually, because 94 occur naturally on Earth, that means that gold, at atomic number 79, is one of the heavier naturally occurring elements.
I mean, if you pick it up, yeah.
It's incredibly dense.
Yeah.
It is very dense. But yeah, so the number of protons in the nucleus is what gives us our atomic number. That's how we organize the elements.
The atomic number is the atomic weight.
No, the atomic weight is the number of protons plus the number of neutrons.
But they're normally pretty close to what its atomic number is.
In the lower order elements, yes. But if we get up to gold, which has an atomic weight of 196.96, 197, and an atomic number of 79, that means it actually has quite a few more neutrons than protons.
Okay.
So, not a radioactive element.
So, is it like the more protons you have, you gotta have like 1.05 neutrons for every proton or something like that?
Hey, it's James in post-production. just dropping in here to say that Jared is basically correct. Strong nuclear forces between the protons and neutrons in the atomic nucleus are what hold it together and determine whether or not it is stable or radioactive. When those protons and neutrons are a little outside of that sweet spot ratio that Jared was hinting at, the radioactive nucleus can start to release energy spontaneously. This is another way that we can change one element into another element through just the spontaneous radioactive decay of nuclei. The best example of this, of course, is uranium decaying into radium and then radon, which is why you have to put detectors for it in your basement to make sure it doesn't build up to unsafe levels. That's just one example, in addition to lasers, nuclear reactors, and super colliders.
So we don't need to go too much farther. I think we covered the basic grounds. So yeah, most elements are found in compounds, right? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned hydrogen. Where do we normally find hydrogen on Earth?
Water.
Exactly. And of course, that's hydrogen in a compound with oxygen, right? H2O. Hydrogen 2, oxygen 1.
I like hydrogen and oxygen. They're pretty cool.
Now, it's actually somewhat rare for an element to occur on Earth as a relatively pure native elemental mineral. Of course. Right? And what would be a couple of the big examples of those? Silver and gold. Yeah.
But all the stuff in the water. Oh, you mean you're talking of like pure things?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, like a mineral vein.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and yeah, gold is among the higher atomic number elements to occur naturally.
I know for some reason gold seems to occur where there is quartz.
Yeah, it's actually heavily associated with the formation of quartz.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, I don't know why. I just know that that's true.
So, honestly, I don't even think I need to describe like what gold looks like. I'm sure that everyone knows. I mean, the coloration. How would you describe the color gold? Is it yellow? It's not just yellow, though,
right? I would call it, like, brilliant yellow.
It's like yellow with a little red, right?
It's shiny.
Yeah, it is shiny.
It's reflective.
For sure.
Kind of, like, it's definitely not matte yellow. It's, yeah, like a brilliant, shiny reddish yellow, but mostly yellow, reflective thing.
The properties of gold are that it's very dense, it's as impressive. You said. It is impressive. Like, to look at it, it's impressive. Yeah. And I think that kind of goes through time.
Of course.
Let's have a little quote from our new textual resource here. The Power of Gold, The History of an Obsession,
right,
by Peter L. Bernstein. Author of Against the Gods.
How's Against the Gods?
I don't know. Oh. But Bernstein, I guess, is kind of an interesting character. He was a finance guy.
Was he a bear?
He was an investment banker.
Was he a bear?
Oh, the Bernstein Bears. I think he was more of a bull. Because he was an investment guy.
Ah.
The bull market.
Ah, you can make money in a bear market. If you're good.
Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah.
He actually did kind of like help advance some pretty important economic theory, but it's some of that stuff that's heavily in the neoclassical tradition.
He's an investment banker,
you
said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's all kind of in the neoclassical tradition. It's, you know, neoliberalism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was really operating mainly in like the 70s and 80s. You know, think like American Psycho.
You talking like, is this guy basically doing PR for like Fiat? Because wasn't that in the early 70s?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
That's why he's writing this?
Because, you know, he would be the type of guy who would say the gold standard is dumb.
It is dumb.
Yeah. Okay. We might agree with him for different reasons.
Or that's my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's also...
He would have some different reasoning for it, we would presume. Yeah. But we would
agree
on that.
He's got the receipts.
Yes.
Because he's an investment banker. He's got a lot of time on his hands because he doesn't fucking do anything really.
Yeah. Well, he wants to know about, like, value and wealth and stuff.
Well,
so he,
I mean... He wants to keep making money.
Again, I think I find some pretty good resources. I think this is a good resource.
Oh, yeah.
Here's quoting
from
Bernstein.
I never claimed that investment bankers aren't intelligent. I think they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
I just think that
you know,
they can make other decisions with their wealth. Well, yeah.
They definitely could.
Yeah. So, quoting Bernstein, if gold were more plentiful on Earth, say, as abundant as salt, it would be far less valuable and interesting, despite its unique physical attributes and beauty. Yet, gold has been discovered on every continent on Earth. That sounds like a contradiction, but it is not. Although gold deposits are widespread in one form or another, no one area has yielded its gold easily. Finding and producing gold demands immense effort relative to the amount of glittering yellow material that makes its appearance at the end of the process.
Because it's rare to find a fuckload of gold.
It's fucking hard to find gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
And we'll talk about your...
I ain't trying to find gold. I already got my gold by a lot of, like, you know, I'm interested in not really the minerals, but, you know, if there's some minerals.
Let's talk about the properties. As you said, it is dense, but also in addition to being dense, it's extremely soft. It's one of the softest metals there is.
I was talking about the property.
It is the most malleable metal.
Yeah.
In fact, you can...
Wait, more than copper?
Yeah.
Really?
And also very ductile, more ductile than copper. You can You can make a single atom thread of gold that is only one atom connected to another in a thread.
Mm-hmm.
You can like beat out like a one gram piece to like a 1 meter like square foot. Like,
and it's strong, yeah. Right?
It is fairly strong.
Like if you were to do that, it would be able to exist. Like,
yeah, because it's so malleable.
You couldn't
do
that with, like, salt.
That's why you can make gold leaf and, like, gold trim and stuff like that, right? Because you can beat it so thin.
That's cool.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, gold is a transition metal, along with other very hard, strong, high melting point metals that form useful alloys. You know, think, like, tungsten, think palladium, nickel. Right. Cobalt, absolutely. Yes.
All the stuff that the slaves are doing.
People are still toiling under incredible conditions to produce.
Yeah.
From like deep earth spaces, yes.
Slavery, folks, it makes stuff valuable.
Well, let's read here. For example, in order to extract South Africa's annual output of around 500 tons of gold, some 70 million tons of earth must be raised and milled, an amount greater than all the material in the pyramid of Cheops. The South African mines are the worst, but of course we're all familiar with the tales of the 49ers panning day after day in the waters of California and ending up with nothing but a few driplets of gold. As Will Rogers put it after returning from a visit to the Klondike, there is a big difference between prospecting for gold and prospecting for spinach. Classic.
Make a lot more money finding spinach.
Yeah, you probably would. So gold is also one of the least reactive elements. Kind of interesting. Which is why it has this incredible longevity. One of the things that he mentions in here is that like you could take a gold filling from a mummy from ancient Egypt and pop it into a person living today, 5,000 years later.
Just like new.
And it would be exactly the same, serve the same purpose. It would need very little, you know, update. Like, this shit doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
So why aren't we, like, building more things out of gold instead of, like, hoarding it?
Well, because of how hard it is to get, right? Like, it's easy to get, you know, steel, right? It's easy to make steel.
Yeah.
Get, like, nickel and cobalt and whack it together, you know?
Okay. But I mean, like, you know, build shit that's really important out of gold.
That was what people did back in the day.
Yeah.
Right? So, interestingly, you know, gold is very dense. It has very similar density to tungsten, which is why tungsten is often used in, like, fabricating fake gold.
Okay.
Because tungsten is also much more common, actually. Let's read from Pindar in the 5th century BC.
Pindar?
Yeah, a Greek. Pindar, in the 5th century, described gold as, quote, a child of Zeus,
This guy had sex with kids, right?
I mean, he was an ancient Greek.
And, like, a guy that was writing shit that we're reading today.
And his name was Pindar.
He's definitely fucking boys.
Let's quote. A child of Zeus, neither moth or rust devoureth it, but the mind of man is devoured by this supreme possession.
Yep. So this is just something about humans and gold.
You want to hear John Stuart Mill's quote about it?
Oh my god. We need to kill as many poor people as possible so they don't take our gold! God damn it! Right, wasn't he the guy that...
Yeah. Gold thou mayst safely touch, but if it stick unto thy hands, it woundeth to the quick.
Just
fuck off, John Stuart Mill.
Just fucking talk like a normal person.
Why does he have to put everything in verse?
Good lord. Fuck that guy.
All right, so in its native state...
The guy was just an incel, wasn't he?
Yeah, before his time.
Jesus,
I mean, in Victorian England, you know, they were all kind of
where
incels.
Everybody was incels. Yeah, he was like the king of them.
Yeah. So in its native state...
It's like, I will never have sex. It makes me happy to not have sex. So happy that I think we should kill all the poors. But I won't say it like that, but that's what I mean. And they deserve it.
So, in its native state, gold occurs as nuggets, or grains, or veins. Right?
Okay.
How do you want your gold, Jerry? You want nugget, you want grain, you want vein?
I mean, I would probably take the vein.
Yeah, vein's good if you can get it.
Well.
I'm going to go for a nugget, though.
Why? Just a little bit easier?
Yeah. And, you know, it's got the weed connotation.
You fucking pothead. I'm just saying the vein's going to be a lot bigger than both.
And, you know, basically, you get your nuggets or grains. These are often in, like, alluvial deposits, right? The veins are going to be more commonly, like, still in situ in rock. Mm-hmm. But essentially, like, oftentimes it's occurring, yes, in granite. But what was the...
quartz.
With quartz, yes. Essentially where, like, deep, deep below the earth, when, like, fissures form, and then, like, there's slipping, and water quickly fills and then evaporates in these cracks mm-hmm. that forms quartz, gold is also included in these areas. Along with copper, palladium, silver, and...
All that good shit.
Yeah. And it's actually a relatively rare element, as we said. As of 2020...
But not, like, that rare, right?
No, it's actually pretty rare.
Oh, really?
As of 2020, in all history, all human history to this point, about 200,000 metric tons of gold have been mined. And that's a metric ton being 1,000 kilograms.
Yeah, but how much is like in the planet still?
Well, presumably quite a bit, but that's all still within the Earth's mantle.
Right. I'm saying like the deeper you go, though, the more likely you are to find gold, right?
But also the deeper you go, I mean, the harder it is because, I mean, you're below ground.
Yeah.
You know. So, but yeah, some of the deepest mines in the world, stretching to 4 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface, are gold mines. Yes, including the one we mentioned in South Africa, which cool. We'll talk about in a moment.
That'd be cool to go in, not as a slave, but like, you know.
Yeah.
Like on a white people tour.
But yeah, so again, because gold is so dense... That 200,000 tons, we could actually visualize it about equal to a cube measuring 71 feet on all sides. So, not like an incredible amount. Like, 71 feet, like, that's not that far. Like, that's like from us to the street.
I mean, sports stadiums are probably bigger.
Oh, like, way bigger. Like, that's not even the size of a football field.
Wait, did you say 71 feet?
Or yeah, meters? 71 feet.
Oh.
Yeah, not even 71 meters, 71 feet. Okay. So, like...
Not that much.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's like why it's rare.
Counting all the shit that, like, sunk in the ocean and everything.
Everything.
Fuck, I thought, like, the Spanish mines back in the Roman Empire were popping off with, like, fucking all kinds of gold.
All gold in human history, a 71-foot cube. But again, very dense, very heavy, but still not an incredible amount.
I mean, that's kind of pathetic now.
So...
What have we been doing? We're just fucking around?
Let me see here. Quoting from Bernstein, unlike any other element on Earth, almost all the gold ever mined is still around. Much of it now in museums bedecking statues of the ancient gods and their furniture, or in numismatic displays, some on the pages of illustrated manuscripts, some in gleaming bars buried in the dark cellars of central banks, a lot of it on fingers, ears, and teeth. There is a residue that rests quietly in shipwrecks at the bottom of the seas. If you piled all this gold in one solid cube, you could fit it aboard any of today's great oil tankers. Its total weight would amount to approximately 125,000 tons, an insignificant volume that the U.S. steel industry turns out in just a few hours. Now, that shows you that this is a little out of date, 125. Nowadays, it's 200,000. There's been a lot of gold mined since this book was written. And let me check. The 70s? Copyright 2000. So I guess it was published in 2000.
Oh, okay.
71 foot, 200,000 tons.
I mean, like relative to the rest of human history, we've kind of mined a shitload in the past.
Yeah, it's because of that really deep earth mining, right? So where does gold come from, Jared?
Where?
Yeah. The same place all elements come from, right?
I mean, yeah, like, they come from fucking, the Big Bang?
Oh, well, it comes from a Big Bang, not the Big Bang, right?
Okay.
So, fundamentally, gold is produced via supernova nucleosynthesis, essentially exploding stars.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. And, of course, that's why, like, hippies love to say, like, oh, you're stardust.
All of it came from the Big Bang, and then, like, more gold comes from fucking supernovas. So, like, you can make more gold.
So, the Big Bang created the basis for atoms, primarily hydrogen, which aggregated through gravity over time into stars that started fissioning and fusing.
Okay.
And then you have hydrogen and helium in a star. But as that star goes through its natural life cycle, it becomes larger and then more dense at the core.
Gotcha.
Which is when you lead to a supernova. The star essentially goes through a period of rapid collapse and then explosion.
Yeah, so I've never taken like an astronomy class or whatever.
Well, that period of collapse and explosion.
Yeah, I thought the Big Bang was like a huge supernova, I guess.
No. Big Bang's a hard thing to talk about. You know, it's still kind of a speculative thing, right?
There's no way to prove it.
But supernovas are well established. We see them all the time around us. Yeah, right? Yeah. You know.
So that makes more. That makes.
That
more
makes gold. Elements. That's what makes all elements.
Yeah.
You know, like carbon, cobalt.
That makes more elements.
All your favorite elements,
including gold.
You got uranium. You got plutonium. All of them? You got hit me with some more elements. You got nitrogen.
Yeah.
You got did I say cobalt already?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what you're going to get? You're going to get some argon.
What about fucking plumbum?
Yep, you're going to get lead out of there for sure. You're going to get some iron. All of it from supernova nucleosynthesis. Fe? Yeah.
What? No, okay, so like, does every supernova create gold?
You know, there is some speculation. It might also be because of the collision of neutron stars. So sometimes these stars can become locked in gravitational orbit with each other. And then when they smoosh together... some people say a single collision of two supermassive neutron stars could create three Earth masses of gold by itself.
Could.
Yes.
Okay.
So what happens after, you know, you have two stars dramatically smoosh each other, or one massive star dramatically fart its contents out all over space? Well, you got all these elements created, right? And essentially, like, let me just talk about, like, what's happening inside this star. How is gold being made from, like, hydrogen and helium? How is, like, the alchemy of the stars occurring?
Because they're ripping the atoms apart.
Well, they're, like, packing them together, right?
Both, right?
Like, essentially, yes. Yeah. Like, some are being ripped apart, some are being packed together.
It's fusion and fission.
Mm-hmm. Atomic nuclei and the collapsing neutron stars are essentially rapidly capturing neutrons from the massive heat and pressure. Right.
This is what we do in a fucking, what are those called?
In a nuclear bomb?
Well, that too, but no, like
a hydrogen one, bomb.
Yeah, that too, but no, I'm talking about like, oh yeah, I guess it would be the bomb. But what the fuck are those things called where they're like doing all kinds of crazy testing in like, isn't there one in Chicago? Like those...
Oh,
Newton Labs or
something? Yeah, the particle accelerators.
Particle accelerators. Yeah. Okay, so that's like a stable version of that.
They're smashing these atoms together, yes.
But very few of them in a controlled setting.
And that's how they're creating some of those higher mass elements that can only exist for a very short amount of time. That's how
they proved this was happening.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Without going too deep into all the quirks of it, you know? You see what I did there? Okay. without going too
deep. I saw the glint in your eye right before you saw it. I was like, oh, God. What's happening?
So, yeah. These stars blow up. They fart out all this space dust consisting of all these elements.
I'm just imagining that scene from South Park where Butters is a pimp and that cop goes undercover and as a prostitute and starts getting his hole a nice little stretch. And he, like, yeah, like, farts a bunch of, like,
into the evidence bag.
Into the evidence bag, that noise. I'm just imagining that whenever you say a star farting out its contents.
Well, so all of those elements get spread around. We can see them as a nebula.
Can you edit that noise in?
Sure, yeah. I mean, but we can see those in like the night sky as nebula, right?
Yeah.
A nebula is a supernova. Nebulae, yeah. But eventually, because of, again, our old pal gravity, all of those elements will start to coalesce into...
I don't know if gravity has been my friend.
Our old nemesis, gravity.
Dude, yeah. Fuck that guy.
We'll start to pull all those elements together into planets, mm-hmm. right? And so all of Earth's gold is from some...
Because the star gets looking a little too thick.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, and that's where new stars come from as well. It's just sort of about, like, the proportionality of the elements that come together,
yeah.
right? So you either get it, if you get a lot of hydrogen helium, you get a star. If you get a lot of harder stuff, you get a rocky planet. If you get kind of a mix of rocks and gas, you get a gas giant, you know, that kind of shit, right? Mm-hmm. You get ice planet, you can get, like, wacky upside down planet. You can get, like... planet with, you know, very low gravity. You can get planet with rings on it, you know.
Are you sure you haven't just been getting high and watching Rick and Morty?
So, you know, all of Earth's gold came from these, some, you know, distant past. Our planet's like 4 billion years old. This might have been like 8 billion years ago. I'm sure there's some research out there about it, right?
All right. How long ago did Jesus ride dinosaurs? It was like 5,000 years ago.
I guess if he was, like, riding an ostrich, then technically, you know.
Oh, okay, I don't know.
That would be riding a dinosaur.
I went and got educated at this.
Well, birds are within the dinosaur clade, so.
Yeah, and Jesus rode dinosaurs.
If anyone rode an ostrich, they rode a dinosaur.
I'd ride an ostrich.
You would be riding a dinosaur.
James, can we ride ostriches sometime?
You're not going to get me near an ostrich, buddy.
I'm probably too heavy for an ostrich.
So, presumably, most of Earth's gold...
I'm talking like a nice ostrich.
Most of Earth's gold is presumably in the mantle, which okay. is the region between the crust, which is pretty much where we do all of our shit, and Earth's core at the very center. Now, the mantle is kind of interesting, Jared, because...
It's the hottest club in the fucking town.
It is hot, but it's like...
Gold?
If we were to look at it like at any one time, it would appear solid.
It sounds like Persia.
Well, so if we were to look at it at any one time, it would appear solid, but okay. on a geological time scale, it essentially operates as a viscous fluid and is therefore responsible for plate tectonics.
All right, what the fuck does that mean?
A viscous fluid?
No, I mean, I know what that means. What do you mean it's a solid, but it behaves like a viscous fluid?
On a geological time scale.
What does that mean?
Over millions of years, it operates as like a viscous fluid. That's why earthquakes happen. Like, that's the ripples in the fluid. Like, we can see it acting in a fluid way when an earthquake occurs. You can literally see the ground doing that shit.
But it's solid. Like, the whole thing's solid.
Like, 99.999% of the time, and to, like, our puny human time scale, it's solid.
So is the core just heated up enough sometimes where it, like, causes enough pressure for it to fucking...
To buckle shit. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Basically.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like you get a volcano, it's an earth pimple, right? You get an earthquake, it's like an earth spasm.
Yeah, I never studied this shit, so.
I thought you had, like, some earth science background or something.
No.
It's all psychology. It's all Freud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now you know, Jared.
Well, and chemistry and physics, but not like earth science.
Okay. Well, now you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, presumably most of it's in the mantle. The mantle, by the way, is 2,900 kilometers thick. Our deepest mine, the gold mine, 4 kilometers, right? So there's still a shitload of gold.
It's way thicker than we've even been, like, down, and haven't even really reached it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, have we ever been? No one's ever been to the fucking mantle, right?
Oh, no. You can't
be able to.
At the bottom of the deepest gold mine.
Like, you could go to Mars before you could go there, right?
So, the deepest, I mean...
Probably.
I mean, we get the deepest gold mine, 4 kilometers deep, okay? At the bottom of this gold mine, 150 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's so, a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you want to work in that?
If I had the right gear.
Now, actually, they are able to, like, cool these by essentially pumping an ice slurry into these tunnels. But obviously that adds to, you know, the environmental cost with energy and, you know, all that kind of shit.
Also, it's going to be humid as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is it actually colder even?
They keep it around 80 degrees artificially. Okay. But the natural temperature...
80% humidity though too?
Yeah, but the natural temperature 4 kilometers down is about 150 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
And interestingly, the name of the deepest gold mine, the one in South Africa... is Imponeng, which means look at me.
Look at me.
Isn't that kind of like some come and see shit?
I mean, yeah, that's what gold, if you're wearing it, look at me.
Come and see.
Come and see.
Well, I was thinking of like that movie about the horrors of like the Soviet experience in World War II, like told through the eyes of a child, come and see, you know?
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that one. Oh, speaking of though, you go ahead, you do your thing. I got to do some Googling and I'm listening.
Okay. Although gold, this is quoting Bernstein, although gold does not mix with other metals, thin veins of it are scattered throughout the mountains where granite and quartz have filled in cracks in the earth's crust and have been pressed together by fierce heat over millions of years. The elements have washed, blown, and scattered these deposits over the years, but gold has retained much of its purity even as it has suffered the ravages of nature's dynamics. Much of this gold has flowed downward in mountain streams. Gold's high density and weight tend to separate it from other materials in the waters, where it drifts to the bottom as nuggets or flows along, fine as a dust. So I think it's interesting that, you know, all of our metals will be replaced given millions of years of geology, right? You just have to let it happen, you know?
That's not how fossil fuels work, too.
Like, no matter how much you want all the gold, you're never going to be able to get it all out of the mantle. You only have this limited supply that's currently accessible. The first gold that's associated with human, like, activity is some nuggets that were collected in, like, a human site in a cave around 40,000 years ago in Europe. So it seems like as far back as 40,000 years ago, around the rise of what we would call, like, anatomically modern humans.
Of course it started in Europe.
Well, I'm just saying, anatomically modern humans,
yeah.
We have burial rites, we seem to be maybe associating some of these shiny nuggets with something of value that we would want to keep with us as a keepsake in our passage, right?
I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't you? If you found a piece of gold out in the wild and you're used to not seeing anything like that?
Yeah.
And you're like the only person you've ever known to find it?
But this speaks to like the innate like appeal of gold, yeah, right?
I mean like...
The power of gold.
Did you ever read the Steinbeck novella, The Pearl?
No.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
So interestingly, gold was more abundant, relatively speaking, in ancient times. Presumably because they had access to most of the easily accessible stuff. And now all the easily accessible stuff has been taken, right? And it's just what you have to like dig 4 kilometers under the Earth's surface to get. And a little bit does go a long way because it doesn't go bad,
you know, gold is good forever. And interestingly, until the development of coinage, the value of gold was largely symbolic. It was just something that was associated with power, wealth, and godliness. Having it did not actually equate to wealth. It just made you associated with it.
People think there's a guy with some gold.
Well, Bernstein shares the story of the golden calf from the Moses story in the Bible.
I didn't really read that much of the Bible.
So at some point after they had fled Egypt,
I'm going to hell, bro. I never got baptized. I never got confirmed. Like,
you know, the story of like the Jews fleeing Egypt, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were slaves in Egypt. Moses parted the Red Sea. They made it back to the Middle East.
Yeah, I know that stuff, I guess.
Well, there was this moment of like when like Moses like went up to like get the Ten Commandments. He was like gone for a while. And all the Jews who he was leading were like having a moment of doubt.
Yeah, didn't he like trip his ass off and some bush started on fire and he inhaled it? And
I don't know if that was, I think that was earlier in Moses' story from like while he was still in Egypt, that particular part.
Okay.
But what I'm talking about here is when he's communing with God, getting the Ten Commandments, okay, the people back down in the camp, not on the mountain, were like having some second thoughts about Moses' leadership and about the whole God deal.
So what's the difference between Moses
and hold on, let me finish.
John Van Leiden, the monster.
So what the people who he had left behind did is they built a golden calf to worship. You know, a Baphomet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was, of course, what most people were doing back then, right? Yeah. They would have some animal or religious symbol that they would worship as a deity.
The Holy Grail.
Jared, you're getting way too far afield, okay? Oh. Let me reel you back in.
Okay.
Okay? Calm down.
Yeah.
Moses, he's getting the Ten Commandments. Yep. You know, the thou shalt nots, that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? The people down here who were not communing with God in the special relationship, they had some second thoughts. They decided to build a new religious idol. They built a golden calf.
Okay.
Where did they get all the gold from? These people were slaves in Egypt. Why do they have all this gold?
Why?
Yeah.
They stole it from work.
No, they didn't, because gold was not valuable.
Oh.
It was just associated with value. But these poor people, these slaves, having some gold trinkets, some gold jewelry and adornment, is not necessarily something that they can use to like buy freedom or something, right? It is not a transmission of value. Okay? That only comes with the development of money.
Okay.
Gold is just gold at this point. So they have enough to build a golden calf.
Like,
I don't know how big it was. I wasn't there. I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't know. What is that one, the fucking Ten Commandments movie, make it look like? I think they have it like dog size or something.
Yeah.
But again, doesn't matter. I'm just saying that, you know, it was only with the development of coinage that actually gold had monetary transitive value, right?
And then they wouldn't have been able to even afford to build the calf anymore.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And incidentally, there are more than 400 references to gold in the Bible. God himself is frequently like commanding people to build shit out of gold for him. Like, you know, and make it all gilded nicely. And make it 20 feet high with a golden top and all this kind of shit, right?
Yeah, Jewish God is like a fucking
prima donna. Loves gold.
Needs a Snickers bar.
Basically, dude. Donald Trump. Yeah. So, also, of course, other biblical figures, like Solomon, loved him some gold, right? These people were obsessed with it.
He had some mines.
The mines of Solomon, yes.
Wait, didn't they, like, pour gold down his throat to kill him?
No, you're thinking of Crassus.
Oh, okay.
So, it was the ancient Egyptians who really set the tempo for the whole gold equaling wealth and power thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really because the pharaohs themselves were living deities. They were living gods.
They wore a lot of gold, right?
And they adorned themselves with gold.
Yeah.
Therefore showing their godliness.
Okay, so the gold wasn't valuable, but the fucking pharaohs got a lot of gold.
Right.
So, therefore,
to show how godly they were.
Okay, so therefore gold is something you would want.
Mm-hmm.
But not because it's valuable, because it's like godly.
Yes, but that becomes through money. Dialectics and like the processes of history, gold becomes the actual object of value.
Oh.
No longer the symbol of, but rather the literal iteration.
But also
of.
Our God, and we worship it.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, not like tradition, not like conventionally, but we think about it so much, and we.
I mean,
we behave in such a way that we worship it.
God commands gold, so maybe gold is God.
No.
There's not very much of it. It's rare. It's hard to find. You have to work hard for it.
No.
So most of the gold in ancient Egypt, and generally speaking in biblical times, 4000 BC to zero, came from the southern Egypt and Nubian gold mines. And actually, Nub or Nub is the word for gold in Egyptian. So Nubia, it's the place where you get gold.
Goldia.
And actually, Nubia would continue to supply gold to the world until the 1500s AD. Let's read about the ancient Egyptian mines.
Nubia's poor as shit, right?
Yes. The Egyptians had developed these mines from shallow ditches, but in time they cut complex underground shafts deep into the hills. The deeper the mines were cut, the greater the human pain that went on inside. The best description we have of the horrors experienced by the workers in these mines has been provided by Diodorus, a Greek who visited Egypt about the time that Caesar ruled Rome.
I've heard of him before.
The air in the shafts was fetid, constantly depleted by the tiny candles that barely illuminated the terrible darkness. The heat was intense. The earth frequently gave way, and subterranean water was a constant hazard. The fires used to crack the quartz in the rock released arsenic fumes that caused excruciating deaths among the many who inhaled them. The slaves had to work on their backs or side, and were literally worked to death if they were not crushed to death by falling rocks before they expired from exhaustion. A mine in the ancient world was pretty much the worst place to end up.
Wait, isn't it pretty bad now, too?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is still pretty bad.
Okay, so you think that, like, the Egyptians must have mined for gold before they built the pyramids, right?
They were engaged in basic mining practices, yeah.
Before the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably led to them being able to build the pyramids.
Well, you can think...
Because didn't they basically, like, inside the pyramids was, like, mine shafts?
You're talking about the development of engineering processes that would have gone into that?
To make these mines. Because basically, like, a pyramid is a big stack of rocks that you put mine shafts in.
Well, they built it around these shafts. They didn't, like, build them in after the fact.
Right, but yeah. That's because digging it's way harder. But they would design them the same kind of.
I see what you're saying, but I guess what I'm saying here is that, like, the natural progression of, like, a science of engineering, you could see how it starts from, like, collecting exposed veins of a metal.
And then going deeper still,
and then you have to, like, maintain mines and, like, learn about, like, fucking building supports and angles and all that shit.
Yeah, you got
right?
enough mine shafts that collapse, you learn a thing.
Exactly. Two.
Hey, I don't think we should do that again.
Well, and, you know, this demand for labor, of course, also kind of speaks to why warfare was so important in many of these societies, because it was a source
slaves,
of labor,
right?
How you would collect slaves to work. Wow. Oftentimes, the people who would be manning or, like, guarding the slaves would be mercenaries from different areas, so people didn't really speak the same languages. Kind of made it much harder to unionize in these environments, to say.
Isn't that literally how Caesar came to power? Because he was, like, a really good general, and basically he would take enough slaves to pay off his guys so he'd have, like, the best paid people. Like, the slaves were the source of him, like, his power, basically. In a lot of ways. Or no.
Well, let's talk about gold mining in the Roman times.
All right.
So, the employment of human labor was the standard mining technique.
Okay, so what I was talking about, though, without, like, their mining practices, they probably wouldn't have gotten to building pyramids, right?
I don't know.
Doesn't that seem reasonable?
I suppose so. I mean, if you were doing some types of engineering, you know, below ground, you would be able to extrapolate some things, I suppose. But, of course, there was lots of iterations in building pyramids. They did, like, trial and error pyramids all over the place. Like, they had, like, I think 13 pyramids, which were kind of, like, flatter. Some of them collapsed. Some of them, like, went frumpy-sided. Like, it took a lot of, like, effort to get to, like, what we think of as pyramids.
So, gold is associated with God, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You have to basically go to hell to fucking retrieve it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to get us back to the story.
Yeah, okay. Never mind.
So, you know, that practice, of course, was used in, like, you know, Spain, infamously. So the Romans originally used human labor to dig as deep as 650 feet to extract the ore from the Spanish countryside. But with a new method called hydraulicking, they used powerful jets of water to break up the rock and expose the gold-bearing earth.
Motherfuckers invented fracking?
Yeah, they did.
Damn, that's smart as shit.
The water came from great holding tanks situated as much as 400 to 800 feet above the site. Now, this method, although wonderfully efficient and productive, actually washed away entire mountains, destroyed farmland, and silted in many rivers and harbors. Now, hydraulicking was used in spotty fashion in other parts of Europe as well, but its most notable reappearance was in California in 1852 at the height of the Gold Rush. There, it was faithfully reproduced in the Sacramento area, with water under pressure of up to 30,000 gallons a minute smashing into the rocky hillsides and mountains. The environmental damage was awful.
I'm going to say, Jesus Christ.
Forests and farmland disappeared in short order, the detritus even pouring into San Francisco Bay and leaving the landscape dotted with piles of rock and barren mountainsides.
I was going to say, that's literally how you create sinkholes, right?
Yeah. It was the primary method of gold extraction in California until 1884, when angry citizens actually had it outlawed. So, in 1884, people were mad about fracking and actually got it outlawed.
And it was, frankly, way less damaging back then.
Yeah.
Like, it was just more noticeable.
Yeah. Today, in the great gold mines of South Africa, the shafts reach down as far as 12,000 feet, and the temperature reaches 130 degrees. As one source describes it, to produce 1 ounce of fine gold requires 38 man-hours, 1,400 gallons of water, electricity to run a large house for 10 days, between 282 and 565 feet cubic feet of air under straining pressure, and quantities of chemicals including cyanide, acids, lead, borax, and lime.
Borax.
The labor force employed in the South African mines exceeds 400,000 men, about 90% of whom are black.
But they're not men.
King Ferdinand.
They're not like men like we've been taught to think of men. They're slaves. Nobody's getting paid to do this in South Africa.
I mean, it's wage slavery.
Okay. So it's not as bad as it was, but still terrible?
I mean, it's wage slavery.
Okay.
You're not taking this job because you have a lot of options.
I mean, that equation you just laid out doesn't sound like they can afford to pay wages to anybody.
Well, that's just it. They're not paying a lot of wages. Like, it's very marginal.
At all.
Right. Well, South Africa is a democracy. Like, it's still a part of the world economy. These people are not, as you would say, chattel slaves.
Okay.
But just like many people in America who don't really have a choice.
They used to be, though.
Here's what I'm saying. Right? But just like many people in America who don't really have a choice in where they work, mm-hmm. it's wage slavery. Right? This is the best that these people can do in the situation that they're in. But they're making some money. Sure.
Because if they could do anything else, they would.
Probably.
Anybody in their right mind should.
Here's a friend of the show, Jared. King Ferdinand of Spain.
Yeah.
Remember he married Isabella, father of Joanna the Mad?
Ferdy, babe. His daughter, she was doing some interesting stuff.
In 1511, Ferdinand declared to his conquistadores, "Get gold! Humanely if possible, but at all hazards. Get gold.
If possible, but at all hazards."
But at all hazards, get
gold.
They
sound like Jim Bowie. Like, be nice if you can, but fucking get what you want. However, like, just get it. But, mm-hmm. like, you know, try to do it nice. I mean, that's what fucking Columbus was looking for, right?
So not all gold has to be mined or fracked. Of course, there are mountain streams.
So you can just find it.
You know, as weathering occurs, as these veins are exposed to the Earth's like atmospheric systems, that gold washes down into these streams and collects in them. Okay. The density means that it can be sifted into these streams and collected.
It separates itself.
Panning for gold actually dates back to Asia Minor, think Turkey, around 3,500 years ago. And the ancient Greeks used woolly sheepskins to pan for gold from rivers. Apparently, the tight curls of the wool were great for capturing and holding those small, dense fragments of gold. This brings us to the story of Jared and the Argonauts. Jason and the Argonauts. And, of course, the Golden Fleece.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the association comes from. Golden Fleece, it's because you would use a sheepskin to pan for gold. So, let's discuss the story of Jason. So, Phrixus, the son of the king of Boeotia, an area in eastern Greece, had been badly treated by his stepmother. So his own mother arranged for him and his sister to escape on the back of a winged ram, whose fleece was pure gold, a handsome gift that she had received from Hermes for services undefined. Now, the trip could have hardly been smooth, because the golden fleece must have weighed heavily even on the ram delivered by Hermes. Phrixus' sister, whose name was Hela, was apparently susceptible to air sickness, and lacking the facilities of modern aircraft, became dizzy and fell off the ram and into the sea.
Hela.
The point where she landed was named after her. Hela's Point.
That's what I was going to ask. Okay.
The Hellespont. Yeah. That's where that name's coming from.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Phrixus held on. After a trip of over 1,000 miles, he was finally delivered by his ram to Colchis, on the far eastern side of the Black Sea. So, think like Azov, right?
Mm-hmm.
Happy to be safe and alive, he sacrificed the ram to Zeus and presented the golden fleece to the local king, Aeetes. Aeetes was delighted as he had been told by an oracle that his life depended upon his possession of a golden fleece.
And oracles were just like women that did a lot of drugs?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like that. All of your friends, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about all of
them. Consequently, Aeetes nailed the golden fleece to a tree in a sacred grove and hired a huge, bloodthirsty dragon to guard it. Okay. So that's how you get the golden fleece from Greece to other side of the Black Sea.
Right.
But now we got to get that bitch home. Okay. Meanwhile, back in northern Greece, a king named Pelias decided he had better get rid of his handsome and popular nephew, Jason, who was trying to assert his family's claim to the throne. So we got classic family drama, right? Jason is like, I'm the rightful ruler. And Pelias is like, fuck you, right?
Pelias is like, maybe you should die.
Yeah. Pelias told Jason that he could have the throne if he would first perform a deed, which well becomes your youth, and which I am too old to accomplish. Classic mm-hmm. bullshit.
I'm too old to go die on this wild goose chase. You should do it.
Fetch back the fleece of the golden ram. When you return with your magnificent prize, you shall have the kingdom and the scepter. Pelias, of course, never dreamed that Jason would succeed and return one day with his magnificent prize. On the contrary, he fully expected Jason to perish along the way. And so, you know, this is where we get, like, the Expendables of 1300 BC. It's Jason and the Argonauts.
The A-team, man.
Yeah, it's like, we got this undoable task, you know? So we need a bunch of renegade motherfuckers.
Did they have, like, a cool moor?
Probably.
With a bunch of gold chains?
I don't know if moors were a thing yet then.
Oh.
Yeah. We're talking way, way back.
Okay.
The way, 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 way back. Okay.
I mean, there were black people around.
Maybe they just had an African. Yeah. Of course, you got Jason, you know, you got Heracles there. Argus, who built the name of the ship was Argus. But that's why they're called Argonauts, is because the name of their ship was the Argus. Okay. Right? There was Meleagor, you know. And lots of other guys.
You know, one of the interesting things about this story, which happened in 1300 BC, is that there are, like, lots of people who wrote about it. Like, many, many accounts of this.
Okay. Like, of it actually happening?
Yeah. Like, now, it's kind of hard to, like, parse out, like, is this just the retelling of a myth by several different sources? Or is this, you know, several different people kind of rehashing over a historical incident? But it's kind of like, I feel like in the synthesis of the two, well, you kind of like have to parse it out. It's the era of heroes, right?
Right.
This is the time of
Heracles
mythical
is like
heroes.
What do they call it? Like a hero.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting, like, there's lots of sources about this that kind of make you think, like, well, even if this didn't exactly happen, like with a golden fleece and a dragon and shit.
Something happened.
Something like this probably
Jason
happened.
Existed.
Yeah.
They did something with a golden fleece, maybe.
They probably did have to, like, sail a long ways away and had some kind of crazy bullshit happen to them. Right?
So it was probably literally a fleece made out of gold, but it didn't come off of a fucking gold sheep, obviously.
Right, exactly. Like, and of course, all of the harrowing adventures they encountered along the way probably were retold and amped up, but maybe had some, like, basis in truth, right?
Plus, it's a tale of, like, a shitty landlord tricking somebody into losing their property rights.
Yeah, I'll just go over the story of Jared and the Argonauts briefly. Basically, he got kicked out of his mom's house. He bought a small trailer, hauled it around the Aegean. His brother stole $5,000 from him. And then he assembled the Argonauts to help him, you know, like, rebuild his claim to his kingdom, right?
All right.
So, anyway, let's pick up as he finds the Golden Fleece. Jason did take the Golden Fleece, with the help of his Argonauts, but only after an extensive and prolonged series of hair-raising adventures. Even then, he would have failed had it not been for the assistance he received from Aeetes' daughter, Medea, who possessed magic powers. Medea had been hit with a dart thrown by Eros, and had fallen madly in love with Jason. So she used all her wiles to catch his fancy. Jason was sufficiently tempted by her to offer to take her back to Greece with him, but on the condition that she support his efforts to take the Golden Fleece. Much as she loved him, Medea was unwilling to yield to what might well have been a seductive ruse. "O stranger," she cried, "swear by your gods and in the presence of your friends that you will not disgrace me when I am alone, an alien in your land." I like that she asked him to swear on the presence of his friends. Isn't that kind of nice? Jason swore to make her his rightful wife as soon as they returned to Greece. As such oaths were guarantees as reliable as written contracts in our own time, Medea delivered the goods by singing the dragon into drowsiness while Jason seized the golden fleece from the tree. The story does not have a happy ending, however.
Any mythology things have a happy ending?
No, and there's always some bullshit lesson to be learned from it, too, you know? Basically, Jason was a compulsive social climber. He was bored, broke, and ambitious. That's kind of what sent him on this whole quest in the first place.
And he was like Icarus's fucking cousin or some shit?
Yeah. From the outset, he was determined to become king of his homeland. He risked his own life and those of his friends in search of a sheepskin dusted with gold. He used a king's daughter to bear children and promised to marry her. When he returned to Greece and found that he could not succeed to the throne, he fled with Medea to Corinth. There he proceeded to woo the daughter of King Creon, but he told Medea what he was up to only after Creon had agreed to his betrothal to the princess. When Medea, inconsolable, recalled to him his solemn oath that he had taken in the presence of his friends on Colchis, Jason justified himself by saying that their children would be better off because his newly betrothed had better social and political connections in Corinth than Medea did.
Damn.
Yeah, that's a dick move, dude.
I mean, yeah.
Our kids will be better off because my new wife has more connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bullshit. The only solace he offered her was some gold and a request to friends to provide her with hospitality. Medea fixed him.
With a fine touch appropriate to the occasion, she created a gorgeous gown made of cloth of gold and drenched it in poison. She then presented it as a gift to the bride-to-be. Delighted at the sight of this beautiful garment, the poor young woman wrapped herself in the radiant fabric, twined the golden wreath into her hair, and died a horrible, painful death. Medea then completed her act of revenge by killing her own sons and flying off in a dragon-drawn chariot she had conjured up.
Fuck.
Jason threw himself on his sword and died on the threshold of his house.
Alright. I'm just saying, he probably shouldn't have done that, but fuck, man.
Hell hath no fury.
I guess. She's like, you know what? Better for the kids. Fuck the kids and fuck your new wife.
The gold of Aeetes' fleece had promised Jason power. That power gained him a princess who promised him a throne. But in the end, it was the gold that snuffed out both Jason and his bride and his future.
Motherfuckers getting greedy.
Well, that's it for part one on gold.
Well, that's part one, huh?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we've got way more mythology to go through and then lots of actual history. You, of course, are interested in the gold standard, right?
I mean, you'd say that.
You could talk about Midas.
Let's more say I am interested in just how interested people are in the gold standard, because I think it's a waste of time.
You know, another theme of our show, value. What gives something value? We'll talk about how that relates with gold and
belief. Some of that stuff is what gives anything value, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, think about what we just read. Like, it is very rare. Yeah. It is very unique in its properties among metals. Okay. One thing I didn't mention is that, you know, you can beat gold so thin that it's translucent. And, of course, that's what, like, why you see gold as, like, a visor material on, like, spacesuits and stuff.
Oh, it's, I didn't know that.
It reflects, like, UV light, but it still allows safe light to pass through it.
I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
But, and, of course, because gold is yellow-red, what light passes through? Blue-green. Mm-hmm. So if you're standing on the other side, you see blue-green light. That's kind of cool, too, right? Want some, like, gold sunglasses or something, you know? Ultra-thin gold. I don't know. I feel like this is classic compost material, although I wouldn't put gold in my compost bin.
I mean, it wouldn't hurt anything.
No.
Just take up space.
Yeah, I mean, it's
might
like...
be a good place to keep your gold.
Oh! Uh-huh. Who's going to be looking in that stinky compost bin for your little sack of gold?
Not most people.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's actually very... Okay. I better not say any more, or else people might be looking at my compost.
Well...
I'm not just going to have mice digging around in there.
Well, I'm just saying, you could probably dig like a little pit, put your gold down in like some type of container...
Yeah.
Cover it, seal it, compost on top of it.
This whole, I don't know, the whole life of pirates makes a lot more sense to me now, you know?
I'm a pirate.
If I had gold, I would probably want to, like, put it in a hole somewhere.
Your new cactuses you bought.
Yeah, we got some cacti from Cactus Jack.
They declared us pirates.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
And gave us free sticker and everything.
We're cacti pirates now.
I could do it. I could, I'm Cactus Jared. I could fucking... I could roll with that.
And I think, you know, we'll also talk about Paha Sapa. We'll talk about the Black Hills. How did all that gold get there? What trouble did it cause for the people who lived there and the people who came there? The answer? Nothing but trouble.
Hi, Mike. I like your new shirt.
So what do you think, Jared?
Think, yeah, we call it up.
Give us a concluding thought.
Concluding thoughts. Yep. Gold's cool. People have known it for a long time. Gold's cooler than most people think for different reasons than people think it's cool. And I don't know. Find some if you can. But
or go to like a museum and see some.
Yeah.
You know, you can appreciate it. I mean, probably like where I've seen the most gold is the Field Museum in Chicago.
Yeah. Or just, you know, steal like a ring from someone that doesn't need it.
Okay, sure. Yeah. But at the Field Museum, they've got like a lovely ancient Egypt exhibit.
Just remember, if you feel bad about stealing gold from like a retail environment, just remember that it was probably mined by basically slaves. So why should you pay somebody that is funding slavery?
Isn't that the whole plot of that Adam Sandler movie?
Adam Sandler was in a movie like that?
Yeah, the one where he was the gambler.
Yeah, and Uncut Gems.
Yeah, Uncut Gems. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Uncut Gems.
Yeah, that movie's awesome. I'd actually watch that again.
But yeah, check out the Field Museum. They've got like some large like native gold nuggets and also lots of like gold jewelry.
And the best fucking insect collection you're going to find in Chicago.
And a very cool plant exhibit made out of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they had fucking like T-Rexes there when I was there.
Yes, they still have that one.
Yeah, that was tight. They had Sue there, I think.
Yeah. Go to the Field Museum. I think that's a general advice.
It's like $24 last time.
Yeah, it's not bad. For what you get, it's amazingly affordable, you know?
Listen, like, it's going to be the best way you can spend $24.
100%, yeah.
Like, let's be honest, you're going to waste it anyway. Mm-hmm. Just get $24, go to the Field Museum.
Yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't get you very much gold, but it'll get you a lot of knowledge.
Well, what's more important?
I'm going to say knowledge.
What the fuck am I going to do with some gold? I don't know how to make a spacesuit. All right,
let's wrap it up, Jared.
All right.
We've been the Compost Bin of History. I've been James.
I'm always Jared.
And thank you for listening, and good night.
Bye.